You're listening to the Self-Made is a Myth, Make a Difference Together show with your host, Coach Tim Campsall, where we talk with successful business owners to hear the stories of their journeys in building their successful businesses. And more importantly, we recognize the folks who help them excel because we know that achieving business success is not something we can do on our own.
Hello, everyone. This is Coach Tim Campsall, and I'm excited to have a fellow business owner from Indiana with us today. Check this out. My guest skipped fourth grade. In his downtime, he enjoys reading about self-improvement and business and fitness, and he's most proud of his five kids. It is my pleasure to welcome Ed to the show today. Hello, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Well, hey, let's start with having you introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit of your personal story. Like where you were born, where you live, about your family and hobbies.
Sure. So I was born in Miami, Florida. My dad was down there working, lived there till I was two, moved back home to Indianapolis, where all of our family was. So grew up in Indianapolis. In 2003, moved up to Carmel with my wife and then one-year-old son. And we've been there ever since. And so we now have five kids from ages 8 up to 21, four boys, one girl. So we've raised our family in Carmel. I like to go to my kids' sporting events and other activities. With five of them, that keeps us pretty busy. Two are in college now, so they're kind of away. So the at-home activities have shrunken a little bit, but still love to do that stuff and hang out with them. I like to work out, lift weights, and read. So
were you moving here when you were two? Do you remember being in Miami, or was that you too young to know the difference between being in a nice warm climate and then moving to Indy?
Right. Yeah. No, I don't remember any of it. I mean, the memory I have was just of, you know, pictures or stories that were told. So, yeah, no, I don't remember any of it.
Wonderful. Hey, Ed, is there a funny story that your family likes to tell about you that you'd be willing to share with us today?
Yeah. So there was, I think it was the first summer after my wife and I were married. We went on vacation with her brother and sister-in-law. And we were packed into a Lincoln Town Car that was like my sister-in-law's, I think it was her dad's old car or something. So it's this big old Lincoln Town Car loaded down with a bunch of luggage, right? So you can imagine it's, you know, it's kind of slow moving. We stopped at a Subway to get something to eat, jumped back on the interstate, and it was my turn to drive. So I was driving this huge Lincoln Town Car, and there was construction on the interstate at the time, so two lanes interstate, but it was down to one lane, and then we were trying to merge into it, so it was not a real good merging situation. It was basically you spit yourself out into one lane. And so as I got down at the end of the ramp and started to merge, there was a semi truck just plowing down on us, and you know, put the gas down, except this Lincoln Town Car loaded down with, you know, four adults and all of our luggage didn't respond well. And the semi truck was filled up our rear view mirror. And then I also had a large water from Subway in my lap that in doing all of that spilled on my lap. And so we almost died, and I had water all in my lap. And so they haven't really let me forget that one for a number of years.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. Yeah. Hey, Ed, tell us, how did the business come about, and at what point did you have the confidence that you could run your own business?
Well, I was in the financial services industry for 4 or 5 years, and I was in a position where I was kind of a go-between advisors at the time, not really advisors as much as salespeople, quite frankly, and the companies with the products, right? So we would work with the an advisor would come to us and say, I've got this case with this client, what product would work, et cetera. And we would have the relationships with the companies, and we would help, work on those cases together. And so I just saw a lot in that time period over those 4 or 5 years of different situations where I thought, man, this could be done a lot better. This could be done more on a consultative basis, looking at the client's whole picture instead of just fitting a product into a situation and what the commission was on it, which is what I seemed like I saw a lot. And so based on that, that's where the idea for Oaktree was born. And I said, well, again, I could do this, I think, on a more consultative basis, financial planning basis, planning for the client, and then plugging in different things to best help them on a fee basis instead of on a commission basis, and on a relationship and consultative basis instead of a transactional salesy type basis. So I think seeing having that experience of how I saw it done and thinking that we could do it better, I think that gave me the confidence to be able to do it. And I think the other thing was at the time, I didn't know what I didn't know. So, you know enough to get started, and then you learn as you go. But
Yeah, that's such a truism of, there's such a big learning curve of running a business that probably if people knew everything that was required beforehand, that they may be less likely to jump in.
yeah,
So
right.
tell us more about the company, Ed. You mentioned the name, but say it again. And what do you guys do? How do you help people?
So yeah, it's Oaktree Financial Advisors is the name of the company. We're an independent financial advisory firm. We specialize in working with employees of Eli Lilly, and we just help them with their financial questions. We like to say that we relieve their stress around money. We simplify complicated finances, and we free up their time. So that doesn't get to the specifics. I mean, but that's what the value, I guess, we provide for them, right? I mean, the reality is that, we're looking at retirement planning, investment analysis and planning, tax planning, estate planning, life insurance planning, education planning, right? All of these, as I mentioned earlier, kind of complete areas of their financial life to help them with those. So that's, that's the technical side of it, if you will, as far as what we do. But as far as, what they're getting is, hey, someone's helping me do all this stuff, and I don't have to worry about it anymore. I've got someone that's quarterbacking it for me, and taking it off my plate, and I have a relationship with them, and we're working together to get this stuff done, right? That's all they care about, right? They don't care about all the details.
Absolutely.
It's like, I don't know exactly how a car engine completely works. All I know is I get in it and go, and it gets me to be right. And that's kind of how we look at it. But that's what we do.
Yeah, I love the car analogy because there's so many different areas where, sure, if we took the time and did all the research and became an expert, like a car, right, we could fix our own car if we really invested all the time required to become, knowledgeable enough to do it, or we could just take it to the shop and have an expert do it for us. So same with our financial planning, right?
Right.
Some people can do it on their own, but it doesn't make sense for busy professionals, right? Hire a professional and get the expertise and the knowledge to have it done for you.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I often use the analogy of, I could paint my house myself and save some money, but, I could also fall off my ladder and end up in the hospital with the ER bills, right? Or dead. And I'm not going to do it as good as they do it, right? I mean, they do it every day.
Yeah, and there's the opportunity cost of what you could be doing instead, like
Right.
either making more money or spending time with family, right?
Right. You're trading your time, your money for time, right? So
So for everyone listening, check out the company and the link in the description below, and go visit Ed on LinkedIn and let him know that you watched his interview. So, hey, Ed, share a story where someone pushed you or inspired you that you could do it, even though maybe you didn't think that you could, and the impact that that person had on you.
I think that would probably be my wife. She's always been completely supportive of the business from the time that I even brought up the idea. So she's been completely on board from day one. She was working at the time, so I don't think we paid ourselves here for, want to say, something like 3 years. That was certainly a necessary thing that, we had her income, obviously. Things were definitely lean, but she never complained about that. She knew what the long-term vision was, and she was all on board on it, all the way, encouraging me and knowing and having confidence. So seeing her confidence and having her support, grew my own confidence as well. So
And what's your wife's name again?
my wife's name is Gina.
Gina, wonderful. Well, yes, it is so important to have that support network, and the first few years can be a lot of ups and downs and eye-opening experiences and drinking from the fire hose with everything that we have to learn to be able to build a successful business. So yeah, having the support of our significant other or family and friends is key in terms of navigating through all those first few years. So happy to hear that you had that. So Ed, what's been your biggest learning as a business owner over the years?
I think that there's no roadmap,
Hmm.
no instruction book. It's not starting a business for dummies and you go buy it. Although maybe that's what I did, but there's just a lot of learning as you go, right? I mean, you can't wait until you've got it all figured out to go do it. You'll never have it all figured out. So you figure out as much as you can to make sure you're not doing something completely, irrational. But then you just start. It's just like, a kid learns to walk, right? He gets up and falls down a bunch of times. He crawls first, just like when he learns to ride a bike. You don't read about riding a bike in a book and then just go out and start riding. So I think that's the biggest thing is just go start doing stuff. And it continues today, right? Even not just starting the business, but when you're trying to grow and try new things, you research things, but you can research it to death, and that's a lot of times just an excuse for procrastinating things, right? For not getting going. So you got to get yourself a certain percentage of the way there where you feel like you're confident it's a good decision. You never know for sure. And then you just go do it and you start learning as you go. So that's something that continues.
I love that analogy of riding a bike, because it's so true. Is we have to figure it out and do some trial and error and make some corrections and internalize things. And here's the reality: the school system doesn't teach us how to be employees or teach us how to be business owners. It teaches us how to be employees. So for those of us who have gone out to be business owners, we're, again, the education system has not prepared us for that. So, we're experts at our art or our craft or our trade, right? And we know how to do the do, but don't have the knowledge and understanding of how to run the business. So that's an area that we focus on with clients, is re-educating them on how to be great business owners to go alongside of what they already know in terms of their expertise of their art or their craft or their trade. And you're right? The journey is, two steps forward, one step back. We try some things, we make some mistakes, we learn from the mistakes, and we keep, we get better because of those learnings, and then we keep pushing forward. And we know that business success doesn't happen in isolation. So tell us about one of your biggest challenges during the years, and maybe a fellow business owner or a colleague who came alongside you and helped you through that.
I would say probably one of the biggest challenges was really very early on was just getting new clients. You kind of mentioned it just a second ago with, you can have all the technical knowledge in the world, but if no one knows about you, it doesn't do any good. So I once heard someone, another advisor, say that similar analogy, or actually it was a real life case where he had a guy that was a certified financial planner that he kind of looked up to and thought was, oh, this guy's a CFP, he's big deal or whatever. And then one night he went in to get gas and went in the gas station, and that guy was working behind the counter, and he thought, man, what is this guy doing? And so it's eye-opening that, okay, here's this guy that was, had a certified financial planner designation, but evidently didn't have enough clients to have a sustainable business, so he had to have this side job. But no, so I think, that was the biggest thing, was just, okay, how do we get clients, right? How do we get people to know about us? I became aware of a firm, another planning firm that was specializing in working with utility company employees at the time. And so that's really what gave me the idea to specialize in working with Eli Lilly employees. And so I didn't know this person or this firm personally, but there was I could see what they were doing, and it made sense to me to kind of have that niche and help a specialized group of people. And so that, I think, was although they don't even know about the fact that I think that it helped us, and I don't know them personally. I think just they say success leaves clues. And I think when you look at a firm like that was successful and it was different, right? It wasn't just, what do you do? Oh, we do retirement planning. Well, everyone did that, right? So this was something that, was more specialized. I liked that appealed to me. And it's worked for us. So.
That's fantastic. Yeah, the having a clear niche or target market and or clarification on what makes you different from your competitors is huge in terms of differentiating ourselves. And so for everyone listening, if you don't have that clarity, spend some time and really understand who it is that you are targeting and what makes you unique and different from your competitors, so that you can articulate it as well as Ed did at the beginning of our interview today. And then the other thing that for folks listening that you want to think about is, what are your lead generation strategies? So if you've identified your target, how are you going to reach out to them and communicate to them and let them know who you are? So we recommend, having 10 different strategies. We call it the 10 by 10. So the idea is 10 strategies, each one represents 10% of your lead expectations. That way, Ed, you'll appreciate this. Just like investing, right? We want to diversify our funds, right? We want to make sure we're diversifying our marketing too, because something that works really well this month, for some reason, won't work next month, and then in 2 months from now, it starts working again. So,
Yeah.
yeah. So that's awesome that you had that insight early on, and I did note when you were sharing earlier that you've got your elevator pitch pretty, down pretty focused in terms of who your target is and how you help them. And I really like that you focused on the benefits that you provide for them as opposed to the technical doing that you do for them. Yeah. Hey, Ed, if I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you to pick three people in your business owner journey that you're most grateful for them being there to help with your business's growth. So, who are those three people and how'd they help you?
Sure. Well, I'd have to say again, my wife Gina, number one. She was there from the time it was just a thought in my head. I can remember sitting on my back porch at our first house, kind of mapping out a business plan and a kind of a 5-year and 10-year plan for our family, based on that. And she was, like I said, she was there through all of that, very supportive every step of the way, and I couldn't have done it without that support from her. Number two would be my business partner, Chris Baker. When I had the idea, I was actually working with him at the time, and I had worked with him previously at another firm. But I picked someone that, number one, I trusted, and number two, that was smarter than me. So, that's been a great partnership over the years. He's been great to work with and work alongside, and So that's been crucial as well. And then I'd say number three is a combination of Abby and Jennifer at our office. So they are our client service associates, two of them that have been here for a number of years. And we couldn't do it without them. They do stuff that, in the very beginning of the business, as any business owner knows, you kind of do it all, right? You're the jack of all trades, but as it grows, you can't do that anymore. And you shouldn't, right? I mean, that's not why you got into it. But and so they do things that I would have no way to do right now. I don't know how to do that stuff anymore. And so they keep everything running. And so they've been a big part of our growth as well. We couldn't have done it without the instrumental work that they do every day. So.
I love what you just shared about things that you shouldn't be doing. So as we grow as business owners, a really fun exercise is to take your revenue and divide by 2,000 hours, which is, 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, and that calculates what your value is to the organization. So folks listening, do that exercise. So I'll use an example. If your business is $1 million, you divide by 2,000, that's $500 an hour. That's your hourly value to the company. So when you do that, if you have a partner, then you divide that by two, it'd be $250. So then you look at that and you review all the things that you do on a day-to-day basis. And anything that's below, $250, you look at, okay, who should I be delegating this to, or who should I be outsourcing this to, or do I need to hire an admin to take this stuff off my plate? Because there's an opportunity cost of, if you're doing all those lower valued activities, they're high value to the company, but they're not matching your value to the organization. You got to get those off your plate so that you can be working on the bigger picture things. So that's awesome that you were able to do that earlier on, and I can appreciate what you said. Hey, there's some things that I don't even know how to do anymore, and that's the benefit of having awesome team members. So congrats on having those superstars on your team.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So Ed, as you think about the next 1 to 3 years, what's the number one growth area or challenge that you see in terms of your ability to achieve your goals?
Yeah, so that would be hiring more financial advisors. It's kind of piggybacking on, what you were just talking about as far as, what you're doing and how much of it you can do, right? So, I mean, for growth in anything, you can only there's only so many hours that a person, can work and can do those things. So, you've got to have the capacity to, help more people. And so that's our biggest thing is just kind of gearing up, hiring more advisors to handle that volume of new clients coming in. Right. So I think that's no question what the next few years are going to be for us is just ramping up the hiring for financial advisors.
I love that you're forward thinking there of, not just assuming that you're gonna, you and your partner are gonna take on more and work longer hours, but having that proactive approach of, yeah, if we want to scale and grow, we need to bring in more people. Because the reality is that the number one reason that businesses go out of business is because of burnout. So love the proactiveness, right? Finding those people, getting them on board, making sure that you're not, just continuing to put more and more on your plate. So great forward thinking. Last question here. Ed, Jim Rohn, he awesome business guru. One of his things that he says is that we become the average of the five people that we spend the most time with. So as you think about that quote, what advice would you have for business owners who are, are just doing it on their own, figuring it out on their own?
Yeah, no, I love that quote. I tell my kids that a lot. Exactly. Seek advice from others. There's another saying, I don't know who to attribute it to, but success leaves clues. What do successful people that do what you do or what you want to do, what do they do? What have they done? Right? Like just kind of like how I saw someone that was working with utility employees, and I said, I want to do something like that. Find someone that's more successful than you, doing things that you want to be doing, but you're not yet, and figure out how they got to where they're at and what they did to get there. And also, I think you have to remember that you mentioned earlier, you know, school prepares us to be an employee, right? We kind of have this, I feel like there's like this track or these expectations, right? You go to school, you go to college, you get out, you get a good job, you buy a house, you have kids, you write, you know, you have a career and you ride off into the sunset, retire. but I think if, well, I know if you're an entrepreneur, if you have a business, you're going to have to do some things in starting and growing that business that other people are unwilling to do. And you do those things now, you're going to be able to do later what other people can't do.
Right.
And so it's just a matter of, you know, some sacrifices and things as an entrepreneur. But, you know, I think it all goes back to finding people that are more successful than you and learning everything that you can from them.
I love it. I've heard people say, yeah, but Tim, I don't have the time to find those five people and spend time with those five people. So how, what advice would you say to those folks that, when they give that excuse?
Sounds like they don't want it bad enough. I mean, yeah. You know, if it's something you really want, you're going to find a way to find those five people. I'm an introvert, right? And I heard a quote the other day that said, and I'm getting it wrong, I don't know exactly what it was, but it was something to the effect of the person said, I'm an introvert, but I decided not to be an introvert so I could make a lot of money and be successful. Like, you can't just say, well, I'm too shy to go meet five people who are successful. Well, if you want to get it done, right? I mean, you've got to do some things that other people are unwilling to do.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the story you shared earlier of the financial advisor at the gas station, right? If we're business development is the key to every successful business. If we're not willing to figure that out and get out and shake hands and kiss babies and, right, and meet people, then right, we're going to be really good technically, but have no business to be able to use those services for. And here's the thing, folks that are listening, having those five people doesn't always have to be a personal face-to-face conversation. They're, you know, Ed mentioned earlier, he's an avid reader, right? You can read books of that those five people have written, right? Or autobiographies about those five people. You can watch videos, you can go to conferences, right? There are a ton of ways to get that the concept of those five people without actually having, you know, five physical people that you're interacting with. So never use it as an excuse. I love what Ed said. You gotta want it bad enough to be able to do the do and figure out how to make your business successful. Ed, it sounds like you've been blessed with some incredible people in your business journey. If they were all here on the show, what would you want to say to them?
Oh, just a huge thank you. Thanks for the support. Thanks for being there along the way and making it possible.
Fantastic. Well, hey, I appreciate you being on the show today. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Self-Made is a Myth show. Please help spread this movement by liking and subscribing to our show and following us on Facebook and LinkedIn. To join our movement, go to bemadtogether.com. Okay, folks, that's a wrap. Please pay it forward and be sure to tune in next time to the Self-Made is a Myth podcast.